Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager here. Welcome to my house for this week's literal fireside chat. Oh, you want me to tell you to turn the music on? You're right. This was a suggestion from one of our butlers who said that we should begin with my favorite thing, classical music. Listen, is that gorgeous? That's Vivaldi. He was an Italian priest. That's right. And he wrote a concerto at least one every week because he worked in a girl's orphanage. So if a new girl came in and she played a cello, he would write a concerto for another cello. But this is for two trumpets. He's great. His most famous piece is The Four Seasons. If you don't know any classical music, you are depriving yourself of one of the great gifts in life. Anyway, that's not my subject, but I just thought I would talk about that. Incidentally, it's such a passion of mine. I will be conducting the Santa Monica Symphony Orchestra at Walt Disney Hall, the newest and one of the most prestigious halls in America. And I only say it because it's such an honor for me. And that'll be this summer. So if you're curious, I will announce the date. It's going to be quite an evening because I'm going to also use the orchestra after conducting a piece to teach what orchestras do. It'll be a lot of fun. Anyway, welcome to my home as I enjoy my cigar with you. And I think I should turn my own phone off now that I think of it. You know, I mean, it is pretty informal here, but nevertheless, you don't have to hear my phone ring. So I'm going to talk to you today a little bit and then take your questions about taxes. And I have two points to make. One is about the notion of the rich getting breaks because of the lowering of the tax rate on corporations. And the other is, and I'll begin with the other, the morality of taxation. It's a very difficult moral subject, and that's always been my preoccupation, moral subjects. Think about it for a moment. You earn money honorably and legally, you work very hard for it, and then people tell you, you will give half of it away, and if you don't, we will arrest you. We will send police. They will physically remove you from your home, and you will go to prison. Now, under any circumstance other than the word tax, you would consider that to be immoral. You would consider that to be, in fact, robbery, thievery. Give me half your money, or I will kidnap you. That's exactly what taxation is. I'm in that bracket because of the combination of federal taxes and California, which I think is the highest in the country, taxes as well. And people don't think that way. So for those who say, well, it's not thievery because people voted. In a democracy, people voted to tax you. So I don't quite understand. If people vote to rob me, why is that less robbery than if they don't vote to rob me? Especially considering that half the people voting to take that money from me don't pay anything, or don't pay any federal income tax, to be very precise. Let me ask you a question. Imagine, what clubs do people join today? Do people have any clubs anymore where they pay dues? Or that doesn't exist, right?
Young people.
They don't have, you don't have clubs. What do you have? Okay. So let's say, imagine you did have a club. Well, I'll bet you fraternities. Fraternities, you pay dues. Right? Okay, that's a good one. That's a fraternity or sorority. Okay, great. So imagine that the fraternity had a vote, on how much dues fraternity members would pay. But the ones who pay nothing, imagine the fraternity had half its members paid nothing. Do you think it's fair that they vote on how much the only ones who pay, pay? I'll bet you don't. You who aren't paying should not be able to decide how much I pay. You got to have skin in the game, otherwise it's absurd. Well, that's one aspect of this. Well, it's voted on. Here's another question that makes it's voted on not an answer to my charge that it's a form of thievery, a form of theft. Let us say it was 90%, not 50%. You will be allowed to keep 10% of the money you earn. Would you say that 90% is a form of theft? After all, people voted it in. Why? Unless you are prepared to say that there is no percentage, what about 100% or 99%? Leave somebody with 1% of their money. What if it were 99%? And by the way, in France, Hollande, the current president, and I believe one of the other candidates for the presidency, also said 90%. 90% of the money that people... Remember, we're assuming you have earned this legally and honorably. We're not talking about taxes on drug dealers. It's a really tough question. At what point does tax become theft? I don't have a number, but there's got to be some area of number at where it does become theft. I'm forcing you to give up your money. Now, of course, on the other hand, I have no problem with us being obligated to pay taxes. After all, I'm getting services for it. Who's going to pay for the Army and the Navy and the Air Force? And who's going to pay for the federal government to function? And the salaries of Congress and so on. I fully understand that. And if the government is in charge of our roads, who's going to pay for the roads? So there's got to be some point where it is morally obligatory to help finance your society. And on the other hand, where it is theft. Somewhere between those two is going to be where theft begins and moral ends. So it's something to consider, and I do believe it is something to consider, because it's a little absurd the amount that people have to pay. Now, I happen to be against all income tax and for a sales tax. Maybe another time I'll explain why, but in a nutshell, what it is you pay not on what you earn, you pay on what you spend. If that happened in America, it's not going to happen. I don't live in make-believe world. But if it did happen, we would have the most robust economy in the United States, in the history of the United States. It would, if imagine you could keep all your money and you only pay taxes on what you spend. And obviously the rich will pay more because they spend more. You ever see their houses? I mean, you know, their airplanes? Of course. But it would liberate people to, if I could keep all the money that I earn, let's say, okay, just use... There's no question I would hire more people to be more productive. And I'm not even a small business, but I would just for my own life. Imagine people who have small businesses, if they were allowed to keep their money, how much they would hire more. Okay, that's part one. Part two is the charge that the Trump tax plan, because it would lower the tax rate for corporations from 35 to 15%, all he's doing is giving a tax break to the wealthy. So let me explain a few, give you a few answers to that in a nutshell. First of all, it's not the wealthy who pay corporate taxes. It's the non-wealthy. See, but there's a problem. The reason this is news to you is that you probably went to college and didn't learn anything, which I do believe is not exaggerating what happens at college. When corporations pay more taxes, you think they pay it? No, they pass it on to you in higher prices. Otherwise, they can't pay it. Or they leave America, which is what We have over $2 trillion stashed away abroad because we have the highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world, or one of the two highest. You know what? Sweden has a lower corporate tax rate than we do. Much vaunted socialist progressive Sweden. So please don't even think this, oh, well, the wealthy are paying. They're not paying. They're living on their yachts just as happily as ever. It's just their company makes less money, and that's not good for us because then they can't hire more Americans to work. Companies make more money. What do you think they do with it? They don't stash it in a savings account. They don't put it in a mattress. They want to grow more. But if you don't have money, you can't grow. Growth is the secret to solving debt, the debt of the country, and to solving the unemployment of the country. Okay, so I just thought I would share those views on the tax issue. Okey-doke, time for you to pose some questions. Jean asks, Dennis, maybe it's Jean. It's Jean?
France.
As soon as I saw that, I figured it probably is Jean. Bonsoir, Jean. Bonjour, Jean. Comment ça va? Ça va bien. Dennis, or Denis, do you have a dog, tu as un chien, in the race in France's election? Do I have a dog in the race in France's election? Yeah. I wanted Fillon to win. And he didn't. He would have won, but for the fact that there were problems. He had personal financial issues that were raised, and Marine Le Pen, the ultra-nationalist candidate, took some of his votes. He was a good conservative guy, and it's too bad that he didn't win. Right now, you have a populist 39-year-old a guy who had never held office, which is fine. I don't have an issue. I'm just describing him, against Marine Le Pen, who has said some awful things. But she said some excellent things and some awful things. So I'm not for her. But the problem is, you know, she recognizes that there really is a threat, an existential threat to France's remaining French, remaining a French national state because of the Islamification of France. But he won't recognize this, her opponent, who will be the next president. So I do have a dog in this race. Everybody has a dog in the race of every country. We're interrelated. I mean, obviously some countries less than others, but France is a pretty important country. Ellie asks, Dennis, have there been times in your life where you were very unhappy or where things were going very badly? If so, how did you cope? If I had had an easy life, I could not have written my book on happiness. One moment, please. Cigars have helped me weather some of the hardest parts of my life. Cigars and classical music. And other things. If I had an easy life, if I had a pain-free life, I could not have written my book on happiness or done my happiness hour every week for 16, 17, 18 years. I have not missed a week that I've broadcast doing my happiness hour, the second hour of my radio show. If you don't know my radio show, this is a Dennis Prager app. I'm probably on in your city. Just check it out. But it is worth hearing. It's where I develop all these ideas at length. In any event, the title of my happiness book is Happiness is a Serious Problem. Now, a guy who had an easy life is not going to title a book Happiness is a Serious Problem. In some ways, my life has been blessed. Professionally, it has been blessed. I've never really had major problems in that arena. Well, personally, I did. And I have, how did I cope? Well, that's why you should read the book or listen to the show. I coped in many, many different ways. It's an interesting question. It's never been quite put to me quite that way. But off the top of my head, for one thing, I have always, always had extremely close male friends. And I don't know how you get through life without close friends. People do, but I don't know how they do it. I mean, obviously, they shouldn't commit suicide, but I mean, I don't know how they do it and be happy. I have put a tremendous number of my eggs in the friends basket since high school. I've always had men in my life that I've loved and who've loved me. So that has been, so for example, you know, in my 17-year marriage, which had a lot of issues in it, collapsed finally, you know, my male friends were a tremendous source of loving support. And that's been a very big part. Having a sense of purpose in life, and so many of the other things that I write about. And you also have to have hope that there will be a better day. And indeed there have been. This has been my happiest decade of my life since my 20s. I mean, I've had a wonderful life generally, but I've had a lot of challenges. But who hasn't? Well, there is an answer. I actually have an interesting... I'm not puffing enough to keep it lit. I have an interesting search in life. How many people, and not at 20, but at, let's say, 50, even 40, how many people have gone through life without a major crisis and major pain in one of four areas? Health, finances, marriage, children. How many people in those four areas have never suffered? And my theory is in America, I can only speak for America, my theory is that in America, about 5% of the population has, to use a great phrase that is not mine, they have walked between the raindrops. In other words, no rain fell on them, even though it was raining. I'd say 5%. And every so often, I meet somebody who, it seems to me, fits those criteria. And I actually ask them. I'm very open with people, and people are open back. I've asked them, are you one of the 5% that you have never really had a big problem in finances, in health, in regard to children, or your marriage? And very few people could say that all four have never had a crisis, but some can. And I'm very happy for them. Let me put it that way. Okey-doke. Karina, a Prager Force member. Uh-oh, I pressed the bottom key here. That's to give me an excuse to puff a little more. Karina, a Prager Force member, asked, Dennis, what's one of the best pieces of advice you ever received? Well, I'm going to tell it to you. There is something that comes right immediately to mind. When I was in my late 20s, I went to a prominent rabbi. I'll tell you his name, Wolf Kelman. He's long since left us. But I went to him. His son arranged the appointment. He was a very prominent rabbi at the time, but I worked with his son a lot. And I just wanted to ask him advice on professional matters, in the course of which he said to me the following. Now, I have to explain two Hebrew terms so you'll understand what this advice was. So I will tell it to you the way he said it to me, and then I will explain it in English. So he said, Dennis, let me tell you something. I pretty much have my Yetzer Hara under control. It's my Yetzer HaTov that gets me in trouble. So here is one of the Hebrew terms. In Judaism, there is a very deep belief that human beings are born with a good urge or a good creative part and a bad one. So, and you could see how true that is, because we all have a voice in us that tells us the right thing and the wrong thing, right? I mean, I'll take a non-moral issue. You know, you're overweight and you see cheesecake. So one voice says, well, it's a little cheesecake and I heard it's delicious. The other voice says, yeah, but, you know, you got to lose weight, so you shouldn't do it. All right? Now, in the moral sphere, you see something you really want in a store, really, really want. You know you can easily pickpocket it, and you'll never get caught. So one voice says, listen, what is this department store? They're insured anyway, and you're not well off, and you really want that dress, or you really want that electronic item. Take it. The other voice says, no, but it's wrong. It's stealing. So we, in other words, there is this, the will to do good and the will to do bad in everybody. So which one do you listen to? So he said to me, Dennis, I have my Yetzer Hara, my will to do bad under control, more or less. It's my will to do good that keeps getting me in trouble. And that opened up a world of understanding about human nature. The desire to do good in no way ensures that you will do good. Good intentions don't generally mean a damn thing. Good results do. Why do half of young Americans think socialism is better than capitalism? Socialism has never taken anybody out of poverty. Capitalism has lifted billions of people out of poverty. Only capitalism. There is no other way to create wealth. No other way creates wealth. It doesn't exist. Socialism spends the money that capitalism creates. So why do people support socialism? Because they think it has good intentions, whereas capitalism has bad intentions, greed. Get it? It's a perfect example. It's part of the reason people side with the left, even though the left does so much more harm. And that's a perfect example, because it means well, and that's all they judge. Do I mean well? Do I care for the poor? If you care for the poor, you should be pro-capitalism, not pro-socialism. So that opened up vistas to me. And in private life as well. So often you think you mean well, and it doesn't come out right. That's why you have to think rationally. Okay. Wow. The next name is Titius. T-I-T-I-U-S. They told you how to pronounce it, I assume. Is that correct? Because I would have said Titius. I wouldn't have said Titius.
No.
Right. Also, a PragerForce member asks, Dennis, what's one lesson that you have learned the hard way that a young man like myself can learn from? Well, what have I learned the hard way? First of all, there are very few lessons that you learn that come the easy way. I mean, let's be honest. That's just the way life works. So most of the lessons I have learned have probably come the hard way. I would have pursued getting married earlier. I married first time at 32. As I said earlier, I've been divorced. And I recommend to young people, do not follow the advice that you have to do X, Y, and Z before you marry. If you meet a good person, marry the person even if you're 21. That's one of the many. I could go on and on. Three more questions. All right, three more. Oh, no, no. That's not the name of the person. Claire. Dennis, what are some red flags you tell women to watch out for when a man is pursuing her? Well, the most obvious is, does he want you or just sex? Notice I said just sex, because if he wants you, he should also want sex. A, that's a guy. B, you should want it too. I mean, that's just the way it works. But if it's that's all he wants, I mean, if you're okay with that's all he wants, that's your business. But that's a red flag. Another red flag, I've actually written about this. You could look it up on the internet. I write a weekly column, which you might want to look at. It's each week in Town Hall and National Review and at my website and many other websites. And sometimes I write on personal matters. Many years ago, I wrote a two-part column, Questions You Should Answer Before Getting Married. I think it's eight questions. I'm not certain. I think six or eight questions. And so they're red flags for both sexes, not just for women. The one for women is the one that I began with on the sexual issue. But otherwise, it's true for both. Here are two red flags, but to answer you, since you want the three red flags. Watch how he, I would say the same thing to a man, watch how she, but I'll answer you. Watch how he treats the waiter or waitress when you are having a dinner out, if you're having dinner out. Because that's very indicative, not always, but usually, about their character. They're going to treat you well because they want something. But the trick in life is, how do you treat people from whom you don't want something? How do you treat the janitor at work? That's a big one. And the other one that comes to mind, it's on my list there, is does he have close male friends? If he doesn't, it's not a good sign. A good man has good male friends. And a good woman, by the way, has good female friends. Michael asks, Dennis, if you had the opportunity to speak at inner city schools to black students, what would your message be? That the moment... that's great. That's a dream. I would love to do that. Here is what I would say to them. Number one, you're being lied to when you're told that America's a racist society. And if you believe that, you have no chance at happiness in life. Because if to walk around thinking that most of the rest of the people in society hate your guts is a recipe for misery. And it's a recipe for misery for a second thing. If you walk around thinking you're a victim, you have no chance at personal growth. You have no chance at happiness. It is a guarantor of misery to walk around thinking you're a victim. It's one of the reasons I have a loathing of the left, because they make people angry and miserable by telling everybody but white, heterosexual, Christian males that they're victims. I have deep passion on that subject. That's exactly what I would tell them. You're not a victim. Final question, Yamil, Yhamil, asks, Dennis, for foreigners who come across one or two PragerU videos but want to understand what the core philosophy of PragerU is, how would you define PragerU's worldview? Wow. Well, we affirm the American Trinity. And that's my term, which I explain in my book, which I beg you to read. Beg you, because it explains the three greatest isms of our time. Islamism, leftism, and Americanism. The American Trinity, because America's an idea. It's not an ethnicity. The American Trinity is found on every coin. Liberty, in God we trust, e pluribus unum, meaning from many one. That's really what we affirm. Liberty, in God we trust, and from many one. I could explain that for an hour, and probably somewhere on the internet there is an explanation of it. There are hundreds of my speeches on the internet. I guess that's a fair... Is that a fair statement of what we stand for? Mm-hmm. All right. This goes very fast, at least for me. If it doesn't go fast for you, that's a bad sign. So thanks for joining me, and hopefully will I see you next week? Let's see, I'll be in New York, and I think I will be back in time.
That'd be great.
I think we'll do it. So until then, all my best. Dennis Prager, thank you.